we'll get started here. I know, of course, you know, and it's understandable. I know some of you are you're a little skeptical on you're thinking as you're just taking your seat, you're thinking, you know what? He's forgotten all about the fact that he said he was going to open up for questions at some point next week. Oh no, I haven't forgotten about that. Oh no. That's in our future this morning. That is in our future. So, you know, those of you who were doubting about that, don't be hard on yourself. But I'm going to improve. It's a sanctification is a slow process, but I'm in it. I'm confident that I'm in it in some degree. Let me open us with prayer this morning. Father in heaven, we thank you for the opportunity we have to have words from you, and particularly to have words from you on some of the biggest questions and the biggest issues of our lives and of our times. And we certainly have that before us this morning in Revelation 18 and our thinking about money and luxury and doing so ourselves, living in really one of the most luxurious economic situations that the world has ever known. So, Lord, give us insight into what is going on here and how it relates to us, how it relates to the end of the age. And, Lord, we hope in that order. And we ask you for your help in Jesus' name. Amen. Rather than take the time to read straight through the passage, because it's a longer text, and you can kind of see how I've broken it out. We'll read the headings as we get to them. But even before we get to our first reading, let me mention that a popular author, pastoral author by the name of Eugene Peterson, 40 years ago or so, he wrote a book for pastors called Five Smooth Stones of Pastoral Ministry. And each of the chapters in the book was on the Hebrew Megilloth, which is the books of Song of Solomon, Ruth, Ecclesiastes, Esther, and Lamentations, which in the Hebrew canon, in the mind of, in the Hebrew canon, they're all placed together, and so they're kind of a thing, a piece of a sort of wisdom literature, and his chapter on Ecclesiastes was entitled The Pastoral Work of Naysaying. And then he made an argument for the importance of naysaying, that is pointing out that not everything is straightforward and positive and happy, and it's good for somebody to stand up and tell you, I look out on life and it looks to me to be complete emptiness and vanity and meaninglessness. And Peterson said, well, that's an important thing to listen to the book of Ecclesiastes, because that's what it says. and it is warning you from a certain perspective, that is simply true. That is simply true. And so it's important to know that, lest you hope in the very things that that book warns you are not worth hoping in. Well, we have a very similar thing here in the book of Revelation. I'm not an economist or anything like that, and don't pretend to be. But broadly speaking, I would definitely believe that if you would give me the option between a capitalist model of things and a Marxist model, for instance. Oh, I'm a pretty strong capitalist in that choice. Like, oh boy, I'm running over in that direction pretty quickly, and I would argue rightly so. I think that overall a biblical view of life would send you in that direction. But in Revelation 18, what you have is this warning. Oh, but there are deadly spiritual dangers in capitalistic thinking. In a capitalistic world, very, very dangerous, spiritually deadly phenomenon are really there at every turn. I think, well, what's he doing? He's naysaying. He's warning you. He's warning you. You look out. You look out. Verses 9 and 10. So we'll have, you'll notice, we find the kings mourning over Babylon, and then the merchants mourning over Babylon, and the merchants are the bulk of the text. And then we have the sea captains mourning over Babylon, which we would think of broadly as middle class people. Middle class. The people who actually do all the work. And then there's a little aside for one verse. The people of God side with God against Babylon, the great city. And then it closes with a picture of the destruction of Babylon, the great city. So let me read these two verses, and then we'll make a note to the Old Testament background. And by the way, I'm going to pause and give you a chance to answer questions at the end of each section. So just be ready for that. Be ready for that. I mean, if you don't really have a question, you don't have to try to ask one. But then when we don't get through all the material, don't blame me, right? But here it is. And the kings of the earth who committed sexual immorality and lived in luxury with her weep and wail over her when they see the smoke of her burning. They will stand far off in fear of her torment and say, "Alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city, Babylon, for in a single hour your judgment has come." Now, the language that he's using here and the language and images that he's about to use are almost all throughout this chapter borrowed in bulk from two chapters in the Old Testament, Ezekiel 26 and 27, which was the fall of Tyre. And Tyre was the economic powerhouse on the Mediterranean see, which is why he goes back and he wants to talk about the dangers of economic powerhouses and living in them and relating to them. And so that's what he's doing here, is he is talking about the Roman Empire of his day and warning, remember, the view of that I take as I come to the book of Revelation is, I referred to it as a sort of a futurist idealism. That is, there is a future reference to all of this. This is going to happen at the end of the age. This will happen at the end of the age. The collapse of whatever empire has been in power will take place suddenly at the end of the age. But that's not the only application of this. In other words, it turns out there would have been no application at all to that, to the people in the first century living in the Roman Empire. He thought there was a vital application to them living in the Roman Empire. And that's what he's speaking to here. And I think he would believe there's a vital application to us living in the American Empire. And he's speaking to us from Revelation 18, but he says, and everything that I'm saying, you'll find already back in Ezekiel 26 and 27 with the judgment on Tyre. Now, I'm just going to quote two little sections from there. 26:16. 26:16. Ezekiel 26:16. Then all the princes of the sea will descend from their thrones, remove their robes, strip off their colorfully woven garments. They will clothe themselves with trembling, and they will sit on the ground, tremble again and again, and be appalled. Why? Economic collapse. That's why. That's why. And then 27, 30 to 32. And they will make their voice heard over the cry and cry out bitterly. They will throw dust on their heads. They will wallow in ashes. Also, they will shave themselves bald for you and put on sackcloth, and they will weep for you in bitterness of soul with bitter mourning. Moreover, in their wailing, they will take up a song of mourning for you and sing a song of mourning over you, who is like Tyre, like her who is silent in the midst of the sea. It's economic collapse again. Just think about it on the smallest scale. When I was in seminary, I got to work for the father of a friend of mine who had just started a brand. I was one of the first employees. He had just started a brand new little company, but he had been the vice president of a company that employed a factory. He was vice president of a factory, employed 500 people there in suburban Chicago. It was 1977, 78. And the bulk of what they made was the inside of RVs. And the inside of RVs, all those little component plastic parts in there. And then there was an oil embargo. And those of you who are old enough remember, and gas prices increased rapidly. Drastically. And RV sales stopped. And RV dealers went bankrupt left and right. And then all those component parts came streaming back toward Gary Barnes's factory. And he went from 500 employees to walking out the door of an empty building in like 8 months. That's what he's talking about right here, only on the grand scale. Like, no, people, I'm going to be working here for on. This is, I'm making my way up through the factory. I'm a foreman now. Gone. Those are the images. Now here, the focus is on, not the merchants yet, they're coming, the political leaders. Why? Well, because the political leaders, it's the kings. Now the fornication that they're talking about is trusting money rather than God. Trusting money rather than God. When things are going well, there's nothing easier in the world. The book of Deuteronomy warns the Israelites, look out when you get into the land and things go well, you'll forget me. Well, that's what Ezekiel is really talking about. The world has forgotten God. And he pictures the Babylonian Empire as being rocked by the fall of Tyre and the disaster, the economic ripples that come across the stage because of that. They'll stand afar off in fear and torment. Alas, alas, you great city, you mighty city, in a single hour, your judgment came. Now, two things to notice here. That you're supposed to be tempted to mock them a little bit. Notice what the kings imagine they can do. They think they might be able to watch economic collapse at a safe distance, as if it's never going to get to them. And John understands perfectly well, right? They already know that's a lie. That's why they're mourning. They already know it's coming at them like a tsunami wave. They do. But they're still kidding themselves. They stand at a distance, as if it can't reach them, as if it won't reach them. And then the second thing to notice is that their weeping is in no way a sort of repentance. They're not weeping over their unfaithfulness to God. They're not weeping because we were wrong. We should have been trusting God instead of trusting our money. No, they're weeping because the source of their money has just collapsed. They're weeping tears of despair because that's all they had. Sovereign and all-satisfying luxury was what their entire lives were grounded in and built upon. That's the picture. And then the third little piece, you know, it happens really, really quickly. Now that the speed with which it happens, Dr. Beale believes that there's an allusion to Daniel 4:28-33. I think he's right. I looked at it as a little, you know, why you putting Daniel in? I thought we were going to focus all of our attention on Ezekiel. But what the Daniel passage does is it shows, this is where he gets the idea that it all happens in an hour. And it's related to Babylon's king, Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, he is talking about Babylon all along here. So 28 to 33, all of this happened to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Nebuchadnezzar the king, 12 months after he was walking on the roof of his royal palace in Babylon, the king began speaking and was saying, "Is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power and for the honor of your majesty?" Right? So, stock market record levels. You can thank me. You can thank me. Real estate prices up. You can thank me. Everything going well for you. You can thank me. Please do. Our administration, we've done it all. We're magnificent. Well, the word was still in the king's mouth. A voice came from heaven saying, "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared sovereignty has been removed from you, and you will be driven away from mankind, and your dwelling place will be with the animals of the field. You will be given grass to eat like cattle, and 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize that the Most High is ruler in the realm of mankind and bestows it on whomever he wishes." Immediately the word concerning Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. See that? Immediately. "And he was driven away from mankind, and behold, he was eating grass like cattle. His body was drenched with dew of heaven until his hair could grow like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws." It's over. It's finished. Down he plunges, and it was roughly instantaneous. And we're supposed to look at that and say, are we a lot like that or nothing like that? Like these kings who imagine we're in control of things. We're blessed because we're smart. We're blessed because all the various things. All the various things. Any questions about that opening little section? That's a short one. The main section is the next one, the merchants. Any? All right. Verses 11 to 17a. So here's the merchants, which is, this is the bulk of the text, and this chapter is, which tells us something really, really, I think, important about the nature of the world in which we still live, and that it's always been this way. "The merchants of the earth weep and mourn for her, since no one buys their cargo anymore. Cargo of gold, silver, jewels, pearls, fine linen, purple cloth, silk, scarlet, cloth, all kinds of scented wood, all kinds of articles of ivory, all kinds of articles of costly wood, bronze, iron, marble, cinnamon, spice, incense, myrrh, frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour, wheat, cattle, sheep, horses, chariots, slaves, that is, human souls. The fruit for which your soul longed has gone from you, and all your delicacies and your splendors are lost to you, never to be found again. The merchants of these wares who gained wealth from her will stand afar off in fear of her judgment, weeping and mourning aloud, alas, alas. The great city that was clothed with fine linen and purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold, with jewels, and with pearls. For in a single hour, all her wealth was laid prayer. She was made. She's made rich. Now, the concept of listing all the products, that was borrowed directly from Ezekiel 27. So over in Ezekiel, I'm not going to take time to read that, but over in Ezekiel 27, 12 to 22, you see this list of products. But here's the important thing to note. The list of products that we have is pulled off of the pages of the Roman Empire's version of the Wall Street Journal. In other words, these are all Roman Empire products, so that nobody reading this can be in any doubt as to what is being talked about. It's as if we were talking about grain prices too, or we're talking about the price of gold and all of these things. And just think for a moment about one of the things that's really significant about this list, related to, especially if you listen, now I haven't been listening to conservative radio for a while because I'm so sophisticated now, you know, that I have this podcast stuff going, so then I just don't listen to the radio anymore all that much. But when I was listening to the radio, you would have this kind of thing really, really regularly. And those of you who ever listen, you'll get this right away. And I'm not saying there's nothing to it or all. But here's how it goes. He said, they're going to go like this. Have you noticed our economy? Stock market up and down, make you a little nervous? Roslyn Capital, you need to purchase some gold. You invest in the right amount of gold, problems over. Problems over. Then you've got the hedge. Now you're safe. Now, if you put that gold together with some food from Patriot Supply, then you're really... You know, now, I mean, you don't have a, you don't, you know, you can, now you can just put your Bible away. You don't really need the Lord anymore, because now you got the gold and the food, which it's tasty stuff. They say it's really tasty stuff. It's really tasty stuff. But do you notice something? These people had gold and silver and everything else, and none of it did them any good when the judgment came. In other words, this what we find on the radio is beast thinking. This is the very message that he is critiquing, that he is warning against. Don't think that an economic system can take perfect care of you. Don't trust economic systems. Don't trust them. Trust God. You have to live in them. You have to live in them. You, in fact, have to do all kinds of interaction with them all the time. That's inescapable. He doesn't have any problem with that. He knows that. He doesn't think these people can exempt themselves from the Roman Empire. He knows they can't. They're in it. But you see, most people in it are absolutely owned by its thinking. They trust it with all their heart. With all their heart. See, as most of you know, I'm a Republican, but I'm telling you, it ought to make you a little nervous when you hear somebody like our president say, "I am going to make America great again. I am." That should sound like the right, like, oh boy. Oh boy, no, you and oh, President Trump, don't talk like that. The living God doesn't like that kind of talk. I am going to do it. I have done it. Whew. No! That's the reaction. You're like, no, don't talk like that. Don't talk like that. On the other hand, again, notice they stand afar off. They make exactly the same mistake as the kings. We'll keep a safe distance from this. Like, no. There's no keeping a safe distance from what we're talking about. No. You look to the Lord. You have to trust the Lord. This is guaranteed. This stuff. I mean, well, you just have to look around in our system. I mean, we're $37 trillion in debt. Probably leads to good things. No way. We lamenting, repenting, turning, oh, Lord, how did we get here? Oh, we need your wisdom. Whatever we're doing, this has been a disaster. Look at this. No. We're fine. We're not worried about it. We're not worried about any of it. And of course, he warns us about it over and over again. See, what does he mean by committing fornication, being drunk on luxuries? What does that mean? Like being drunk on luxuries. Friend of mine, much younger than me, moved over to Michigan, and every once in a while he'll send me a song that he knows I like. So I'm not quite this sophisticated. I'm sure it's very, very simple. You younger people all know how to do it, but like he's in his service and he just pulls it off, and then he'll just send you this link as an email, and there's the song, you know, and actually, as I was preparing this, he sent me one of those. He sent me my favorite Elton John song. I can't even really tell you what the song is about. As with most Bernie Taupin lyrics, they don't really make a lot of sense. It's roughly, broadly about New York City and greed a little bit, but it's called Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters, and it's on a 1972 album called Honky Chateau. And I thought, as he sent that to me, I thought, you know, I remember when my friend Barry Hirwateri and I hitchhiked 100 miles from Fort St. James, British Columbia, into Prince George, British Columbia, which was the closest town with a larger sort of record store. And that's where I bought my copy of Honky Chateau. But when we were like 60 miles on the way there, the drive shaft came off his car. And so then we abandoned the car, hitchhiked the rest of the way, bought the albums, And then called his dad to, his dad owned a tow truck and they had a filling station sort of thing. And so we called his dad, told him where the car was, and then we hitchhiked. We hitchhiked back home. A friend of mine, about just a very, very shortly after that, the lead singer of the progressive group Supertramp just passed away. When I was in high school, they had like one monster album, just went right to the top. It's called Breakfast in America. Had like three major, major hit songs on it. He said, and I'd never listened to that album in my life. He sent me that death notice. And you know what? I listened. I listened to Breakfast in America. I was just driving back and forth. I listened to the whole album. I said, how would you do that? Streaming service. You know, I now walk around as most of you do. I got 10 times as many albums on this thing right now as that store had in all of the place. 10 times, 20 times maybe, 20 times. What is that? That's a piece of luxury, my friend. That is a sort of luxury that the people of the ancient world could not have even imagined. That's what that is. Just last Monday, I'm rereading Solzhenitsyn's The First Circle. One of the early chapters, so Solzhenitsyn talks about they're in an upscale prison camp. They're intellectual studying audiology for Stalin, and so that he can communicate effectively with the citizens. And it's upper crust, highly educated people. In the parallel of the Solzhenitsyn character is one of the characters in it, but they mentioned that in the workplace they listened to Beethoven's 17th Sonata. So I'm reading the chapter. I took a 30-second break, and then I was reading the chapter, listening to Beethoven's 17th Sonata. Right off of this. That's a luxury. Think we've gotten used to stuff like that? Ooh. What would you do not to trade that kind of thing away? That's what he wants you to think about. Look out. Look out for the grip, the power, the strength of these luxuries that we've gotten so used to. It's unbelievable when I think about it in those ways. Like, yikes! Yikes! Questions about that? Second, so there's the merchants. We come back to the merchants at the end because they're the star of this chapter. Dan.
No,
relatively speaking, no, you're exactly right. Relatively speaking, you're correct. But in the Roman Empire, they have more than they've ever had before. They have better roads than they've ever had before. They're traveling more easily than they ever have before. They have more products coming into their community than they've ever had before. Because with a big empire like this, one thing overseeing all the sea trade There's lots of products going everywhere. So no, there's been a huge economic upturn, even though by our standards, no, they're not much. They're not much. Like when I visited, to your point, when I visited Mongolia in 1997, my sister was living there, and you know she'd been there since 1992, and they had these, at that time there's almost no cars in Ulaanbaatar. There was, you know, I might have seen 100 cars. Now there's one big traffic jam in that city now all the time, according to Hete. But just 28 years ago, like there's a few cars floating around, and everybody just walks and ride their bike. But they had these kiosks, and you know, and my sister had just told me, you know, that when she went there, like in the, I was there in the spring. So she said, like in the spring of 1993, if you went to the store in Ulaanbaatar, you could buy noodles. That's it. The mutton had run out. You could usually buy mutton and noodles. But late in the spring, when the weather got such that, you know, herdsmen couldn't get their stuff into Ulaanbaatar for a little while there, whatever mutton they have inside the city limits is what they got. And then once that is eaten up, then there's noodles that come in on the train. And that's what you'd have. And you'd have to get by for a few weeks. Well, now it's 1995. And so I'm like, wow, I just went down there at the kiosk, you know, I can buy a Pepsi for $1.25. And my brother-in-law said to me, yep, you can. You can buy a Pepsi for $1.25, and it takes the average Mongolian an 8-hour day to make your equivalent of $1.25. So if he works 8 hours, he can buy that Pepsi. That's what it was like in 1997. Now, they're in a different world. They're still not, I mean, they're nothing like our world. They're still third world. But it's improved for a greater percentage of the people. That's what's going on here, too. This system has lifted all boats. It's lifted all boats, and they are glad their boat is lifted. And you tend to, you know, simply then praise the system that lifted the boats. And you don't think about God at all, which is the deadly peace he's warning them about. This stuff is fragile. It comes and goes. It comes and goes. Any other? Chuck. Yeah, well, it's just the classic, right? So the more successful you get, the more likely you forget God and can just trust yourself. That's why America is such a dangerous place. That's why the gospel doesn't go far here. That's why most people aren't all that interested in it. Why? We got too much stuff. We don't feel in desperate need of anything. We're pretty self-satisfied. We're doing good. I got 15 record stores worth of albums on my phone right now. And I go through the pantry at my house to decide if I want to, you know, something to eat. Well, I got a lot of stuff to choose from here. You know, I just kind of can go down the thing. That's where we live. That's a really luxurious place. And it makes you complacent. You know, give us this day our daily bread. I got my bread. My bread's laid out for months. I'm great. I'm good to go. And Jesus said, you teach yourself not to think that way, because that's not true. the stability around you in an illusion, and it can disappear rapidly. You should know that. Really rapidly. That's his point. All right, the third little piece here. The sea captains, basically the middle class. So 18 and 19, they say this. And they cried out and saw the smoke of its burning. What city was like the great city? And they threw dust on their heads as they wept and mourned and cried out, "Alas, alas, the great city, where all who had ships at sea grew rich by her wealth. For in a single hour, she's been laid waste." Their jobs are gone. There's no cargo moving. That's all done. That's all done. Well, now what? You know, it's kind of like, you tell me. No. Big trouble. But again, you know, the authors, they want to think that they can they look out and they see her from the outside. They saw her burning. What city was like the great city? I was like, oh boy, our economic God has gone down in the dust. They're not looking to the living God. They don't think about him at all. It's just like, whoops, whoops. Collapse, bad, terrible. And it all happened so very, very, very quickly. Now, the people who side with God in such things are in verse 20. Now, this shows, remember, these people all live in the Roman Empire too. The economics of what they're talking about affect them just as much as everybody else. They're not standing on the outside of this mess as it's pictured. They're in the middle of it with everybody else. And yet, see, they are those from the previous chapter who have obeyed the command, come out from among her and be separate. And so they're not shocked by any of this. Rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets. For God has given judgment for you against her. So what in the world is that about? Jeremiah 51, 48. Jeremiah 51, 48. This is where he's alluding back to Jeremiah 51, 48. The original Babylon that had, of course, sacked Jerusalem, murdered the people of God in massive numbers, and so forth. Then heaven and the earth and everything that is in them will shout for joy over Babylon, because the destroyers will come to her from the north, declares the Lord. In other words, she will be destroyed. She will be taken over by her enemies. Yep, she tortured us. But there's nothing there. There's nothing there. See, in all of this, all of the intimidation and so forth of an empire, it's all designed to get us to join it. This is the way to be. These are the people in charge. These are the people who are pulling all the levers. This is who's you see it in our culture all the time. Don't be on the wrong side of history. Don't be sure that you're on the side of our cultural elites. You can't miss over there. These are all the smart people. They're the best people. You want them to approve of you and be sure that they do. And whatever you have to do to gain their approval, do it. Do it. And we do. We do. It's very tempting. It's very tempting. But this group, you see, they see it all differently than that. Like, no, I recognize that for what it is. And so when judgment comes on that, the people of God, it's appropriate, and I knew it was coming. And he lists off who he's talking about. He just calls them the saints, the apostles, the prophets. Though that's just shorthand for the people of God. And then since we'll pause for questions at the end one more time, but let me jump to the next section quick, because this takes us back and starts to bring a few of these things together, the destruction of Babylon. So 21 to 24. Then a mighty angel took up a stone. And probably here the angel is the same angel that begins the chapter, so it's Jesus. You know, the one whose glory shines up over the whole earth. And he threw it into the sea, saying, so will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and will be found no more. And the sound of harpists and musicians and flute players and trumpeters will be heard in you no more. And a craftsman of any craft will be found in you no more. And the sound of the mill will be heard in you no more. And the light of a lamp will shine in you no more. And the voice of the bridegroom and the bride will be heard in you no more. For your merchants were the great ones of the earth. And all the nations were deceived by their sorcery. And in her was found the blood of the prophets and of the saints, and of all who have been slain on the earth. So eventually, all this stuff that seems so glorious and important and impressive, he's just says, and this is the naysaying. It's all going away. It's all going away. If this is where all your hope is, it's all going away. Now notice though the things that he refers to along the way. Music. Music is a wonderful thing. The Lord invented music. Music is absolutely a wonderful thing. But we worship music, right? We worship music. You know, I talked about listening to the 17th Sonata of Beethoven, which is relatively, you know, I'm not enough of a classical person to be able to recognize what piece of music that was when I read about it. But as soon as I started to listen to it, like, oh, yeah, I know that one. I know that one. And Beethoven is amazing. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And hence, what happens? You have on, you know, NPR has had a show for, I think, all my adult life. Maybe at least 30 years of it or 40 years of it. St. Paul Sunday Morning. St. Paul Sunday Morning. You put that on the same time as other people might go to church. And what happens on St. Paul Sunday Morning? You listen to classical music. You worship classical music together. The music. Yeah. And he says, it's going away. Not that there'd be no singing in heaven. Of course, he doesn't mean that. But he means this thing that you idolize, gone. Art and the crafts and the craftsmanship, going away. Going away. Manufacturing, going away. It's not going to last. And then finally, that little line, it's a striking line, right? And you see it right on the surface. What's so fascinating, maybe like no one in recent history, you see it in our generation, right? The merchants are the great men of the earth. Influence-wise, how influential is Mark Zuckerberg? I don't think you could even guess. I don't think you could guess. How influential? Just think of the billionaires that you measure by hundreds of billions of dollars. Who's greater than them? I've never seen one of their yachts. We were just out of Puget Sound, though, right? And so we were watching, you could, off of our balcony, you can see the boats going by, and there's, all kinds of half a million dollar boats and stuff like that, but twice in a week a major league yacht goes by out in the middle. You go, now you're looking at like a $45 million boat. My son said once to me when he was smaller, this is the kind of question he would ask. You see a boat like that. Dad, what do you think that person does for a living? He's, kind of thinking, I'd like to chart my course maybe in that direction. So what do you do for a living that you end up in that boat? Because and that's how seductive it really is, right? Even a kid can think of it instantly. How do you get from here to that boat? That's what I want to know. How do you become one of the great men of the earth? Their merchants were the great men of the earth. But the point of the chapter, you see, is, and the great men of the earth founded themselves on nothingness and sand. And it just disappeared out from underneath them. In total, complete loss. Questions? We've got just a couple minutes left.
I just have a comment.
Yes.
From a European perspective, and maybe come to the defense of America a little bit.
Yep.
So, because I see a lot of successful and wealthy people in America that will acknowledge that they're blessed by God.
Oh, absolutely. Well, well, there's absolutely nothing. In other words, don't mishear what he's saying here. He's not at all saying it's impossible to be a godly merchant. No. He's saying quite possible to be a godly merchant. It's possible to be a godly merchant. You should, in fact, seek to be a godly merchant. But be careful. Because the more, it's exactly what the Lord warns the Israelites about. And this is what you don't really have and what you raise up, Anna. This is the difference. There are still a lot of, in America, there's still quite a few people around, quite a few business people around, who regularly give thanks to the Lord for what he has blessed them with, and they think that way. He's got no problem with that here. You know, and those people, see, they understand already when the collapse comes. They were already looking around. They already know, I can see that the Lord, I mean, I don't know how long it's going to be before the Lord judges this mess that we're in, but I know the Lord well enough to know that he's coming, and this isn't going to be good. And in that sense, they can't turn it around by being faithful themselves, but they can certainly be faithful themselves in the eyes and in their relationship with the Lord by being godly business people. He's got no problem with the reality of godly business people. He's just saying, of course, in the pagan world, it's much more like what you're describing in Europe. There's nobody who thinks that way in the Roman Empire. The Christian community is so tiny in the Roman Empire. There's no godly business associations in the Roman Empire. In that sense, it's much more like Europe is now. It's just completely devoid of any thought of God. He comes into nothing. That's not true in America. Right? And even if you were trying to have it be true in America and you tuned into that the Charlie Kirk Memorial Service, I heard an excerpt from it, like, what? What is going on? I haven't heard American politicians talk from a perspective like that, and I don't know how long. But it's still, see, that kind of thing was, you know, is still possible. That, you know, your point is well taken, Anna. America and even Canada, quite a bit different from each other already now. America and the United States. However, our elites are right where Europe is. And we're still being slid in that direction pretty quickly. And the point is, it's grounded on nothing. That's his point. It's grounded on nothing. And is eventually absolutely certain to disappear and leave nothing behind. And so you have to found your life on the living God, is where we'll come back to next week when we start into Revelation 19. Now, I know that I don't want any of you to run forward and say, Pastor, I confess I didn't think you were going to pause to say questions. I'm sorry. No, don't say that. I don't need to hear that. I'm fine. I took the questions. Like I said, let me close this in prayer.